Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Celebrate Recovery Podcast. My name is Johnny. I'm a believer who struggles with alcoholism. With me again, as always, is Bob. Bob, would you say hi to everybody?
Hey, everybody. Hey, Johnny, how are you doing today? This is Bob, a grateful believer in Jesus Christ. I'm in recovery for a drug addiction and sexual addiction, and it's so wonderful to have some cooler weather out here in Las Vegas.
What's it like out there?
It's in the 70s, and I am incredibly grateful right now.
Yeah, we have a little bit of a cool, break in the weather, too, but I hear it's going to turn back up later on this week. But I'll take what we have for now. Have you heard about what the weather's like in Racine?
No, not yet. What's it looking like out there?
I don't know. I haven't checked either yet. I'm just wondering about it. For those of you who don't know, we're going to be in Racine, Wisconsin this weekend for a one-day event with the 7 Keys to Celebrate Recovery going on in one room and the Advanced Leadership Training going on in another room, and that's going to be fun times. We haven't done that in a long time, it feels like.
It has been a while, and I'm just looking forward to getting back out on the road and meeting all of our friends and Celebrate Recovery leaders from all over the country. It's just an exciting time.
Yep. Yeah, I am too. I think it's going to be great. And we're going to do a couple of podcast recordings while we're out there and kind of try to get some people on them that we don't get to see all that often or that we haven't been able to talk to yet. So that's going to be fun.
Yeah, that'll be kind of a new adventure for us. That'll be fun.
Yeah. So, Bob, what's going on with you?
Well, I'm just started back to school, actually. I'm going to one of my first classes tonight. I've been working on my degree here for a number of years, and I'm excited that I think I'm in the final stages of it. I got a few more classes to take, and I'm looking at graduating this June, and so I'm real excited about that.
That's very cool. That's very cool. I have some more to go myself, and then it's going to be I'll be done for a while, so that's going to be fun. Well, Bob, these last few podcasts seem to have been going pretty well. I think people are enjoying them. We've gotten some good responses on the blogs, some emails that have come in. It's good to know that people are listening.
It is. It's real encouraging to know that we're not just sitting here talking to ourselves for the hour that we're together, and but there's actually people getting benefit from it, and that makes it all worthwhile for me.
Well, that's what's so crazy. There's been a few times that, you know, I've walked away from this just having spent some time with you going, oh, man, there's some ideas that, you know, we can put in our ministry today, you know. So that's kind of neat when we just kind of get a chance to talk to each other and learn from each other. So that's been a fun time.
Yeah, it's been definitely a mutual blessing.
Yeah. Now, we've got we've been working on this five-week megathon of guidelines, and we've come to the last one. So
here we go.
Yeah, so here we go. We're going to So we're going to talk about the fifth and final guideline, and you know, that's kind of crazy when you think about it, about how big this ministry is and how many different churches it's in and everything. We've got five guidelines that run our groups. You know, it could easily be a lot more than that, but there's only five, and they're pretty simple and straightforward, and this one, I think, especially so.
Yeah, this one for me is quite fun. Because I get to see the application of this one affect somebody's life rather quickly. And let me go ahead and read it so that we are all kind of on the same page with it. And it says, offensive language has no place in a Christ Center recovery group, including no graphic descriptions. And, you know, one of my favorite things is to be sitting in a group and you'll have somebody that's coming maybe for the first or second time. And they may be used to going to other meetings, or maybe they've never been to a meeting before, and they start cussing in the group.
Yeah.
And right in the middle of their sharing, they'll catch themselves and actually sometimes apologize for using that kind of language in the group. And I think, I wonder if that person has ever apologized before for using language in the group.
Right.
I have to think that's probably the first time that's ever happened, but they realize that nobody else in the group is using language.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of stands out and sounds kind of funny, and yet there's positive change happening in that person's life as a result.
Yeah. Yeah, I think sort of when I look at this one, you know, especially with the way it's worded, there's kind of a no duh moment for me, you know, where you start to think about that statement. But I think when it trickles down a little bit to, like you're saying, to a newcomer or to somebody who's not familiar with how we do things, or that's looking at this meeting as another meeting in their, you know, court card meetings or in their mandatory meetings or whatever it is, they really wouldn't. Not everybody necessarily is coming to Celebrate Recovery because it's Christ-centered. And so I think
that's right. They could be coming for a lot of different reasons.
Right. And this is sort of another reminder to them that, oh, this is a little bit different of a place that I'm used to, you know. And I, what I like about it, too, is it's another place where I sort of feel like we're saying we're not backing down from the fact that Christ is our higher power. You know, we're saying it, you know, so many times. But here's another time. You know, Christ is our higher power. We're not going to make apologies for that. So how, Bob, you mentioned some of the positive effects or seeing that. How do you see this working in groups?
Well, you know, before I was just recently at a more traditional 12-step group, and it's funny that we're on this topic because as I was sitting in this room, not one of these guidelines that we've gone over the past 5 weeks was being followed. Hmm. And in fact, probably the most vocal one was this one of offensive language. And as I was listening to people share, I'm like, do they know any other word besides the F word?
Right.
And it just seemed like it kept coming out over and over and over again. And because I've had so much experience in Celebrate Recovery, it maybe stood out for me more than it normally would. But I realized how refreshing it was to come back to Celebrate Recovery and have this guideline in place, and how people are able to articulate themselves in a much healthier way when they start using words that are more descriptive rather than just, you know, foul language or something like that to describe what is going on in their life.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think that there is sort of a moment of, you know, how do I talk in a different way than I'm used to talking, you know, in a new way or a different way, you know? And I think that's sort of an interesting point, because we're not trying to tell people they can't, that they have to change the way they talk. We're just saying that this is something that can't happen in the context of our groups, you know?
Right.
Bob, how do you see it, or what do you see are some of the reasons behind asking people to refrain from using offensive language in a group?
Well, I think the first thing is that it could cause potential triggers for someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially if they've grown up in an abusive environment, or maybe where they grew up in a family or at work or in another situation where cussing is used as an abuse, really, emotional abuse. And hearing others share that way and open up that way and use those kind of words to express themselves could be a potential trigger for someone. And, you know, I think the other part of it, the other reason for it is that, you know, let's face it, this is a Christ Center program.
Right.
And we want to honor God with what we're doing in this ministry, and specifically honoring God's name. And,
right.
You know, it was very common for me to use God's name in vain before I was a believer. You know, even though I'd profess I didn't believe in God, I would certainly use his name enough in a negative way.
Yeah.
And yet now here I am in a Christ-centered program, and I want to honor God. And I want to honor God with my words, with my heart, with my life. And I just think that this guideline helps to steer people in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. I think what it does, again, is it says this is a different place than you're used to, you know, and we're, you know, a lot of times people say recovery is just another way for spiritual discipline. And this is one of those ways that I agree with that. You know, it's taking something that I'll be real honest with you right now. My mouth has been a struggle with me for a long time. When my heart gets wrong, I can always tell because my mouth starts to go, you know, swear words or whatever are come to the surface more. And sometimes I don't even say them, but I think them, you know, or different ways of expressing myself that way. And that's a real good time for me to go, whoa, okay, something's not right in my life right now, because all I did was just get cut off, you know, and I swore, or I was, you know, got angry this way or that way, you know. And this is one of those, because of this is one of those ways I can go, okay, well, what's going on that my mouth is being affected, you know, that swear words are coming out more, you know. And so it's learning that about yourself. It's learning that, saying, man, when I'm unconnected or when I'm disconnected from God or when I'm spending too much time watching TV or whatever it is, you know, I mean, everybody's got their own stuff. But in my life, you know, certainly if I'm not spending time with God, if I haven't been going to meetings, if I'm not connected to my accountability team, those are all things that start to add up to, you know, sin creeping back into my life and allowing the devil to have a foothold. And one way he knows to attack me is through my language. And so if I haven't learned to speak a different way, or if I haven't learned that there are times where it's like, you know, it's just not acceptable here, that may or may not happen as easily. So
I think that's the way you put that is perfect, because it really acts like a warning light.
Yeah.
To let me know that there's something going on inside. And although, you know, just cussing isn't going to cause me to relapse.
Right.
The reasons that I'm starting to go down that road could be a potential pitfall for us in the future. And I noticed the same thing in my life that, you know, I'll overreact to something and I'll use cuss words and it really will stand out for me that, you know what, that I'm a little too angry about this situation than I should be. And what's really going on that's driving some of that anger that's going on the inside.
Yeah, no, I think I think that's it for me, at least exactly, is it's like, whoa, that was, or, you know, I'm getting too comfortable with the idea of that that's an okay word for me to say, you know, mm-hmm. or that, you know, I think that's the thing that sometimes movies and television and music, you know, I've always been a guy who would say, oh, I don't pay attention to the words. Oh, yeah, you do. Everybody does. You know what I mean? Sorry, but you do. And if you go to a movie and there's offensive language, you know, there's been times I've gone to a movie and I've gone, golly, this language is just out of control. But it doesn't sound any different than what I heard at the mall today or what I heard, you know, or the thoughts or the words that came out of my mouth, you know. And it's like, I have to watch that for myself because, you know, Bob, you and I have taken on the idea that we're going to tell people about Christ, you know, that that's something that we've been saved and we want to help other people find Christ as their higher power and as their savior. And if we're going to do that, we need to set ourselves apart and we need to act in a different way. Well, I'm not acting any different than if I'm out to lunch with a bunch of my, you know, non-believing friends and nobody can tell amongst us who's a believer and who's not because my language is as bad as their language is, you know. And so while that's sort of a larger life kind of topic, it happens in a smaller way in our groups, you know. So
right, and I think that correlation between what I do in my day-to-day life and what I do in group, you know, that there's a correlation there. Would I say this in group?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it in group, do I need to be saying outside the group? Or am I only practicing these principles when I'm in the small group?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it does give me a guide. It does give me a point where I can measure and say, you know what, I wouldn't do this here, so do I really want to do this out here?
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think what's cool about that is that it works both ways with that. You know, I've seen guys in group, like you were saying, that they'll start to swear and they go, oh, sorry, guys, you know, and then they keep going. Or they'll, you know, they'll just kind of be in the middle of sharing and they correct themselves. I don't have to do it. They do it. And that happens because of practice. You know, that happens because they've been there before and either they've been corrected or they know they've heard the guideline enough times or they understand that it's church. You know, even though what we're doing at the time isn't considered church, we're in a church or we're meeting, talking about church. You know what I mean? And there's, for a lot of us, even when we're living bad life, you go outside, you know, when I was acting out, I'd go to church and man, I felt like I was in the house of God, even though I was disconnected from God in every other layer of my life. But there's something about being in the walls of the church that makes you kind of, you know, act up a little bit.
And I think that's so cool that even though, you know, it may be a small thing in comparison to the struggles that people are coming in with. Just though having this guideline in place and facilitating it is already creating positive change in a person's life. Just hearing them say, you know what, guys, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that, or, you know, correct themselves, to me is just such a huge thing that they're already making a small step towards change. They're already trying to do things differently than they normally would.
Exactly, because what it implies is that they know that there should be change to be made. You know,
if I
can change the way I talk, if I know that I need to change the way I talk, then I can start to see that there's other changes that need to be made in my life. If I want to follow this program, if I want to follow Christ as my savior, and my higher power, I have to change. That's part of the reason that this program is so powerful, is we don't hide the fact that change is necessary to escape your past hurts, hang-ups, and habits. You know, if you can't live the same way and not expect anything different to happen, you know. And so while the language that comes out of your mouth may seem like a small thing, it's not. It can be a huge, huge roadblock between people and God and between people and getting change in their lives. Now, one thing that I think is interesting, we've added something to the guideline where we say including no graphic descriptions. Bob, what's your take on that?
Well, you know, when I first heard that, you know, I was thinking of the, you know, of course, for myself being a sexual addict, you know, that's the person that I was thinking of, you know, not getting too much graphic detail on sexual behaviors, potentially causing somebody else to stumble. But since then, I've realized that it really applies to all the groups that we're dealing with. you know, the alcoholic or addict that's romancing or talking about a using experience in such colorful detail that everybody's walking away thirsty or ready to go use could be a potential trigger as well. Or the eating disorder group, you know, that's talking about a relapse with, you know, some sort of food that is their drug of choice could cause the rest of the group to go into a relapse mode before they even leave the group. And so, you know, having this in place for all the groups, I think, has merit to it. And I think it's actually had a positive effect on the groups that we have.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because I think it's sort of walking that fine line between saying, you know, share what you need to share, but don't share this, you know, and I think that's how a lot of people interpret it, at least. I don't actually think that that's what it's doing, but I think people interpret it that way. You know, I'm supposed to be able to share anything, but I can't share about, you know, an experience I had. And, it, you know, again, it's learning. It's a new learning experience. It's how can I talk about something in a way that doesn't glorify it? Because I think that happens a lot, you know, as being an alcoholic and somebody who struggles with alcoholism. Even now, I'll tell stories to you, Bob, or to my friends or whatever, and we'll talk about, you know, our drinking days. We'll talk about a time that, you know, such and such an event happened. And it's either funny or, you know, I can't believe that I was that stupid or whatever the situation is. And we can tend to make it sound like, if it was so great, what'd you stop for?
Right.
You know, it's like, well, man, if everything was great and your life was so much better and nothing, you know, it didn't cost you anything, why did you ever give it up? And I think that that's something that a graphic description can do. It can kind of make you feel like, you know, sitting around and telling drinking stories instead of sharing and working on your recovery.
Right.
I know I've certainly had that happen in groups before. Have you ever seen anything like that in a group?
Absolutely. And, you know, I was just, as you're sitting here and talking, thinking about another group that, you know, has been affected in a positive way, I think, by adding that guideline is also the abuse group.
Mm.
You know, when somebody begins to kind of understand where their abuse has come from, especially if it's something that happened in the past, and there's a tendency and a need to want to kind of share that openly and out loud. And, you know, you get somebody in a room that starts sharing graphic detail about an abuse that has taken place in their life, it is going to be triggering the rest of that group to the point where it can get unhealthy.
Yeah.
And so people do end up going into some kind of relapse mode, whether it's alcohol or drugs, sexual addiction. And so it's just learning to find that balance that I can definitely share what is going on in my life or what's happened in my life in a way that is still appropriate for the listeners and for the group to keep it safe and open and, you know, have the ability to really talk about what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've taken this guideline and we've stretched it. This is another one that sort of happens in our large group section of the evening as well, our general meeting night, where if you're giving your testimony in our group, we, you know, and Bob, I suggest this for every group, is that every testimony needs to be written by the presenter who's going to give the testimony, read by the ministry leader or somebody on the team that's given that task, and then edited to make sure that there's nothing graphic in it, and then given back to the presenter with a few, you know, we try to do it so that they have a few days before they deliver their testimony so they can get used to the changes we make. And we explain to them every change that we make. But that way, Bob, we just make sure that there's no super graphic or really any graphic descriptions for that matter from the pulpit, even in a testimony. Is that something that you guys have done?
Yeah, I think that's great wisdom. You know, one of the things that we always try to do is put on a lens of a newcomer.
Yeah.
You know, what's a newcomer going to be feeling? What's a newcomer going to be experiencing? How are they going to receive this information? And I'm sure you've experienced it in that you've had testimonies come across your desk. And as you've read through them, you thought, I mean, this is making me think thoughts that I don't need to be thinking.
Yeah.
What is a newcomer going to feel like who's walking into the door for the first time? And so it's hard to take somebody's life story, you know, make edits to it and make changes to it. And sometimes it's not received real well. But I've got to keep in mind the whole picture and that this just isn't about the person giving their testimony, but it's also about the people that are in the crowd that are hearing the testimony and trying to find that balance between the two. And, you know, it is absolutely vital that I take that in consideration because I don't want to cause somebody to stumble just through listening to somebody's testimony.
Yeah, and, you know, there's another audience that I also think about when we edit, too, and I think it's you know, it's one that we try not to spend too much time thinking about, but it's pointless to pretend that they're not there, is that there we have critics that come into our tent. You know, we meet in a tent on Friday nights. They come into our church, into our meetings, that are looking for reasons that Celebrate Recovery isn't going to work, or that are looking for reasons of why Celebrate Recovery isn't actually biblically based. Now, they're very few and far between. It doesn't happen all the time, but they're very vocal when they are out there. And a graphic description and a testimony can be all that person needs to then go and tell everybody that they know, at least, or to tell that person who has found change in their lives that they don't want to have found change, look, this program's not for you. Did you hear what that guy just got up there and said for 15 minutes? He talked about this, that, and the other thing. And, I mean, that's something that we try to keep in mind as well. Just that way, there's no ammunition for them, you know, when it comes to that. And Bob, when you have had to take something out of someone's testimony, how have they responded to it? Has it been a positive thing? Have you ever had to go negatively and had to deal with it? What have you seen there?
Well, I think generally speaking, it's been pretty well received. I think a lot of you know, the leaders that we've had over the years have trusted us because, you know, we've tried to earn their trust. And so when it came to actually turning in their testimony and having it edited, that they had a pretty clear understanding that that's what we were trying to accomplish, and have the newcomer in mind, and, you know, not give critics ammo and protect them as an individual as well, to make sure that they're not putting themselves out there too far to where they may feel like they shared something more deeply than they should have. So I think they've put that trust into us. And as we've done it over the years, we've certainly had those that, you know, were against the changes that we made because they felt very strongly about it. But we had to help them understand that what's important for you isn't always what's important for the listener. And right. So, and that's the balance that we're trying to look for. If we want it to be your story, we want you to tell it, we just want to make sure that it's audience-centered and it's going to take everybody's consideration in mind.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that many times, if not almost, I can't think of a time where it's not true, it's really not saying, we don't want you to share about this event that's a crucial part of your story. It's how you're sharing about it that we want to watch out for. You know, it's not saying we don't want you to talk about this time that A, B, or C happened to you, because that's obviously, a lot of times, that could be a major part of your story. But look, man, you're making it sound like it was cool, you know, or you're sharing in such detail that you're going to make people feel uncomfortable, or whatever the reason is. And I think usually when people understand that it's not that you're trying to alter their story, you're not trying to make them say things that, you know, I'll often call the guys up and say, you know, listen, I'm trying to work on your testimony. Here's one part. I need you to come up with another way on how to say this. Because it's not that I don't want you to share about the time this happened. It's just do it in a way that's conducive. Don't do it in a way that's going to cause people to stumble or that's going to make people uncomfortable, you know. And once you do that, I think you're right. Most people go, oh, I understand that, sure, you know. They may not feel like it was inappropriate, but if you explain to them that you're an outsider and all that kind of stuff, then you start to get it. Go ahead.
I think the guiding light that I've tried to use, too, is as we've kind of talked about the guidelines over the last 4 or 5 weeks here, is safety.
Yeah.
You know, the reality is that people are going to be uncomfortable. The listeners are going to be uncomfortable. The speaker is certainly going to be uncomfortable and nervous and unsure about this whole thing. But is this going to make the listener unsafe, cause them to potentially relapse, or is this going to cause the speaker to feel unsafe? And this would be in the group or in a testimony setting or anything like that, where it's going to cause them to get into an unsafe situation where they feel like, you know, an overwhelming sense of shame or an overwhelming sense of guilt or the regret that, oh my gosh, I shared way too much in that story. You know, we talked about this before, those overshares,
right?
Where I felt like I shared too much detail about something and I walk away from the meeting going, oh man, I shared way too much. What's going to happen to me? You know, and we're just trying to protect them in that public setting from that experience.
Yeah. I think, you know, there are times where I weigh very carefully what I say from the front. You know, far more so than I do in my groups, because I it's not as safe, because not everybody there is there for recovery. There are a lot of people there that, hey, I don't need it. I'm bringing my kid, you know, but I'm fine. But they don't, you know, so they don't identify with me or they don't relate to me. Or there are those people who don't understand, or there are those people that feel uncomfortable. And so there are a lot of times where I think, you know, in my group, I would share this, but I'm not going to share this from the large, you know, from the large group platform, because it could be unsafe for somebody else or it's unsafe for me, you know. And that's not even something graphic. That's just I might not share a certain, you know, I may not stand up in front of my group on a Friday night and tell them that I struggle with my mouth, you know, with cussing or whatever, because that may be something that they just don't need to know, but I'll do it in different areas, you know? So I think there's a sense of saying I'm going to be, you know, transparent to a point, you know, where people are going to get to see me and know me, but they don't have to know everything about me, you know? And I think that's a good thing to teach people.
Mm-hmm. I think this guideline, I know we've kind of gotten off talking about how it applies to testimonies, but I think this guideline helps give us a way to do that.
Yeah.
On both sides of it, you know, it's not to, you know, use language that would be offensive for somebody, and then also not have too much graphic detail that would cause somebody to stumble. And I think just trying to find that balance is huge. And,
yeah,
you know, in the group setting specifically, you know, when somebody starts sharing too graphically, you know, you as the leader are the one that's going to have to step in that situation.
Right.
If you can see everybody else in the room is starting to squirm and starting to get uncomfortable and starting to look to you going, you know, how long are you going to let this go on? It's up to you as a leader to step into that situation. And this is probably going to be one of the hardest guidelines to interrupt somebody and say, please use less graphic detail to do, because they're pouring their hearts out. It's usually not going to be something pretty. And the group is looking to you to be able to do that.
Yeah, I know certain groups that have said, you know, they've empowered all of the people in their group to be able to raise their hand when they feel like the description is getting too graphic, you know. But again, that needs to be weighed in with newcomers in mind and all that as well. I know groups that have, you know, that the leader has, I think this is sort of, we've said this a lot, but the first time it's a pulling the person aside and dealing with them one-on-one and not being, you know, shaming in front of the group. I do think that this guideline is kind of broken up into two places. You know, the first is offensive language has no place. I think anybody can you know, identify what an offensive word is. You know, what sort of words aren't allowed. You know.
You know what? I did have a leader ask me one time, can we get a list of offensive words? And I'm thinking, number one, no.
Yeah.
But number two, I mean, come on.
Yeah. I was going to say like a guideline for that or a way to go about it. I'm not even going to do that. No.
Uh-huh.
But
I mean, you know what we're talking about when we talk about offensive language.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you know, no swearing, no taking God's name in vain, you know, those kinds of things that would fall in that category, you know. But again, you know, I'll even, you know, when somebody swears, I'll sort of give them one free one, you know, and then the second time I'll say it to them. You know what I mean?
Exactly. If it continues to go on and on,
right,
you need to step in. But oftentimes a newcomer, especially somebody that hasn't been to meetings before, is going to slip.
Yeah.
And they're going to experience that. And you know what? It's okay. But if they keep going down that road, then of course we need to step in and say something.
Well, and there's a huge difference between a slip and a heart issue. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's one thing if I tell a story and I slip and I swear. It's another thing if I'm trying to get a rise out of you as a leader.
Right.
You know, it's one thing if I tell you a story and you come up to me later and you go, man, Johnny, that was, I want to warn you about your sharing. That seemed really graphic. And then, you know, next time I'm going to have to call you on it and blah, 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 blah. It's another thing if week after week after week I come and I share graphically. Because in some ways that can be a form of me acting out.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, that I'm there, I'm trying to make you uncomfortable. I'm trying to make you relapse, or maybe not relapse. I'm trying to trigger you. I'm trying to push your buttons. Or I'm trying to get some response out of that.
Right. That kind of rebellious nature that because we have this guideline, I'm going to rebel against it.
Exactly. You know, and I think going back to testimonies for a second, there are those folks that have said, well, I don't understand why you have to change this. I don't agree with you. And at a certain point, I've never had to say this, but I've had to think it before, you know, it's like, okay, is this a thing of, it's more important that you say what you want to say, how you want to say it, or is it more important that you get up there and you share your story? You know, and I think that it just boils down to the same thing, is rebelliousness and just sort of like, you're not going to tell me what I can and can't say. But I think, I really think most people understand this one and they start to get it pretty much right away.
I think generally speaking, that's been my experience. You know, it's not, it's not a huge barrier to people's recovery.
No. I think here's what happens. People hear it and they go, oh, okay.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
about as much thought as they give it. And they say,
that's
oh,
right.
man, I slipped. Sorry, guys. You know,
that's
and it,
right.
it becomes more of a thing of when I'm at Celebrate Recovery, I don't cuss.
Right, and they know that. They hear it one time and they know that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be around guys, you know, and in a totally secular setting, you know, at the gym or out, you know, I'll see them in a restaurant or something, and somebody will slip and they go, oh, sorry, just because they're around me. You know, they know I work at the church. You know, it's like, it's okay, man. It's not, we're not in group right now. I'm not going to tell you how you can and can't talk right now. You know, I mean, I'm going to encourage you to watch it. And, you know, if you're somebody in my, in, you know, if you're somebody that I spend a lot of time with and that, you know, then maybe it's a little different. But usually it's like, I can't tell you how to talk. We're not in group. But in group, this is a guideline.
Right.
Well, Bob, we're only at about a half an hour, and we've been pushing an hour on these lately, but I really think we've said about as much as we need to say about this one.
I think so. You know, what we've tried to outline is just, number one, how important this guideline is. Number two, I think how it does affect positive change in the individual's life. And number three, how it keeps the group safe. And it keeps people from potentially being triggered or, you know, rolling into some kind of relapse. And I think number four, actually, what you shared is that it does act as a warning light for us. You know, the guideline does help us see that if there's something going on in our heart, we can begin to see that, you know, maybe there's other issues going on. So I think it's a great guideline.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. I think, again, it what I like about it is it denotes this time is special and different than the rest of time, you know.
And yeah, that's an excellent point.
You know, if you talk about going to a secular meeting, this just makes this makes it a different thing, you know. And sometimes that's the attitude I need when I go into it, you know, is that this is a special time for a special thing. And one of the ways I know that is that not only am I not going to be using offensive language if that's something that happens in my life, but also the other guys in my group aren't, because we all understand that this is a special time.
That is. That's a great point, because I really feel like those small group moments, that's holy ground right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
And God shows up in that moment. And, you know, the more we can honor him in that, I think the better the group is going to be.
Yep. I agree. I think, you know, one thing I've always loved is that definition of holy is set apart. You know, and I think one way we show that we're set apart is that we don't talk the way that the world talks and we don't act the way the world acts. Well, there are times, because I'm a broken human being in my walk, that I do act like the rest of the world. You know, I do stumble and fall and I do make mistakes. But when I concentrate on it and when I think about it, when I'm spending that time in God's word and when I'm spending that time focused on it, I can then really understand what it means to be set apart. And in our groups, while we're on our, you know, while we're in that time, that's a time that should be a holy moment. You know, that should be a time that we're focusing on Christ and we're focusing on what he's doing in our lives. You know, we're coming, especially for our general meeting nights, you come from a time of worship and then a testimony or a lesson right into your group. It's like, man, that vibe needs to kind of carry through with us, you know. And we can do that by just ensuring that this and the other four guidelines are upheld at all times. So, well, Bob, one more question before we call it a day. After these 5 weeks of getting together and talking about guidelines, have you uncovered anything, any new ways of enforcing them or any new nuggets, you know, of needing them or anything that's just happened the last couple of weeks that you've found as we've been going through this together?
Well, I think, you know, as I talked to our leaders about it, it's and encourage them to listen to these as well. It's encouraged them to understand the guidelines better. It's also encouraged them to facilitate the guidelines more. You know, being a new ministry, a lot of our leaders haven't had the experience over the years of interacting with these guidelines, and certainly haven't in the traditional meetings that they've gone to. And I think it's encouraged in them the commitment to the guidelines and how important they are in the group. And as they've heard them again and listened to how they apply, they've seen specific situations in their group where if the guidelines were held and facilitated, the group dynamic would have been different as a result. And so that's been real encouraging for me.
Yeah. I think, you know, the thing that's been really cool for me is just watching as as people start to understand the need for the guidelines. One of the reasons I like the training events that we do, just with our leaders at Saddleback, we'll take them through training. And as you start to explain the reasons behind things and people start to get on board with it, it really comes to life that, okay, I get this. You know, you're not asking me to do something that is, you know, a crazy thing. You're just asking me to hold on and do the right thing here, you know. So,
and I think the brightest examples that stand out for me are the times when the guidelines have been broken to my own detriment.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody has crosstalked or tried to fix me or broken a confidentiality about me, when I've experienced the consequences of not having the guidelines, that seems like when the light bulb finally goes on and I go, okay, I get it now. It doesn't have to happen that way, but it certainly is an exclamation point in me understanding how important the guidelines are. And some of my leaders have had that experience as well, and it's really shown them why we need to have these.
Yeah, Bob, that's because not unlike me, you're thick-headed. And you need to make your own mistakes and kind of pay the consequences.
Can you see that all the way from California? How thick-headed
I am?
I can.
Well, yeah, okay. You know, I've been around you a while. No, but I find that to be true too. I think sometimes I need, not only when something's happened to where it's cost me something, but when I can tell that I've not upheld something and it's cost somebody else something.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
A lot of times it can go both ways. Where I think, man, if I had just spoken up and asked that guy to, you know, knock off his cross-talking or whatever, the person who really needed it or the person that got hurt wouldn't have, because I was there to stand up for him. You know,
that's exactly right.
So I think that's really cool. Well, like we said earlier at the beginning of this, we're headed to Racine, Washington for the first
Wisconsin.
I've been saying that. I was born in Wisconsin. And I keep wanting to say Washington over and over again. We're going to Racine, Wisconsin this week. And here's the thing. I haven't been back to Wisconsin since I was a baby. I'm a Green Bay Packer fan. They're 3-0 right now, by the way, for all my
fans
out there. They're 3-0 right now, and they're not even in town. So I can't even see them play in Lambeau Field. Not that I have tickets or know anyone who does, and if you do have tickets, let me know. But isn't that crazy? A team I've been following for forever, and I can't even see them play while we're there.
I know. That's just wrong.
Now, if anyone from Wisconsin is listening and they're screaming at me because – was Racine is so far away from Green Bay, please forgive me. My geography is terrible. But, you know, look, I'll make the drive if I could. But I'm excited about it. I'm excited to get back out there and to do some more of this training that we love to do, and I think it's going to be a fun time.
And we look forward to sharing with you guys live while we're out on the road what we're experiencing as we do these one-day summits.
Yeah, yeah. Now, and do me a favor while you're out there. If you've been listening to this podcast and you come to it one day and you see Bob or I around, let us know that you've heard it, what we can do better, what you've liked, what you'd like to hear more of. And listen, if you're listening to this on iTunes, don't be afraid to click on that Be the First to Write a Review button and let the world know what we're talking about and what we're doing, and we'd appreciate it. Well, Bob, I think that's going to do it for us. I'll see you in a few days.
We'll look forward to seeing you on Friday.
All right, man. I'll see you at the airport, I guess, huh?
Yeah, sounds great.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening. This is the last of the five-week series of the Celebrate Recovery Guidelines discussion. We will be back next week with a brand new talk for you. Talk to you soon.